But firstly, I'd just like to take a moment to reflect on the amazing fodder that Andrew gave us. I don't know about you guys, but I actually had no idea how much the Bible has to say about depression. I found that really encouraging and heartening, and I think particularly for those of you without a lived experience in the audience, I think that's a really amazing learning point to reflect on what Andrew said and use the amazing words in the Psalms and in the other parts he referenced to really get a great understanding of how people feel. Because that, and I'll reflect on this in a minute, can be one of the hardest things when you're helping someone if you don't know what this experience feels like. But what better resource to use as the Bible? Also Psalm 40, which I haven't read the Psalms yet, new Christian and all that. Psalm 40, wow, that's maybe going to be a new favourite part. I've actually got it open here. That's just been really exciting for me. So thank you, Andrew. Just quickly, what I'm going to do in the next little bit, there's a few different things, but I want to reflect, I just want to mention the resources that are in my sort of part of the handout. What I've put together is hopefully 3 pages of resources about Canberra-specific resources. I apologise to those of you who are not from Canberra. I'm happy to put together a similar thing for your area. Please just email me. I just kept it Canberra-specific for now, but a lot of it is general. What you've got is Australia, for all our problems with help-seeking, has some really great resources to deal with mental health issues. You've got your crisis stuff, but you also have a whole lot of web-based resources, which are really growing. Beyond Blue, who hopefully you all heard of, Black Dog, Mood Gym and eCouch, produced by the same people that I actually study with, Reach Out, specifically for young people. And I particularly wanted to point to the Royal Commission into Institutional Responses to Child Sexual Abuse. I'm not going to talk about abuse in this talk. However, when I was looking for abuse sort of specific resources, because it is very much an issue that comes up and we can't ignore, that website, they've put together an amazing amount of resources, and I didn't expect that, so I highly recommend checking that out. There's also, on the last page, a few Christianity-specific resources and pieces of interest. That's been the most joyful rabbit hole to go down as I've been preparing this talk. In particular, the last thing I've got referenced on that handout just before Andrew's stuff is an article by written about Rick Warren, who's a massive pastor in the States, about churches must do more to address mental illness. I've got a quote there, but that whole article is wonderful brain food and encouragement for what we need to be doing and what we can be doing as churches. He's written quite passionately about it in the wake of his son committing suicide. So now we'll go into the meat of the talk again. Things and short people don't go well together. So depression. Depression is several conditions. It's characterized by a number of things. Most importantly, from a clinical sense, it interferes in daily functioning. As you can see, the rates are different for the genders, 1 in 4 females and 1 in 6 males over a lifetime. And one of the things about depression is it may be difficult to diagnose. That's partly because we all experience feelings of sadness and of upset, but it may be difficult to diagnose. Next slide, please. So I'm going to do in this section, can we skip that one? Sorry, I was flicking around with my slides during the break. Classic mistake. One of the things I want to emphasise in this next section of the talk is some of the things that you can be doing to help those in your Christian families or other families that are affected. So depression, one of the classic things we hear about is telling people to snap out of it. If someone has come to you and is being depressed, you might think they're attention-seeking. You might think that they don't need help. If they've come to you, they need help, regardless of what's caused it. They will be hostile or sarcastic. My poor good friends, as I mentioned earlier, I've had a reasonably rough week. At times, I have been downright rude to them. I apologise later, but treat them with love at every point. It's not a case of they don't know what they're doing. Sometimes they are just trying to be mean. But that is the depression and that is the angry headset talking. Remember why you are their friend or their family member. remember that you love them and treat them as that, not as the person who's talking through the depression. Don't take away their agency. What I mean by this is it's really easy to do things for people, particularly when they're sick. One of the things when you're depressed or experience a lot of, this is specific depression stuff, but it does, of course, generalize. It's easy to think, oh, I'm just going to do all these things for you. One of the last things, that's one of the last things that you should be doing, because they already feel weak and helpless and frail. And so telling them or implying that they can't do things, that's not going to be particularly helpful. That said, ask them what you can be doing. Suggest things and then do them. Don't not help them, don't not do things for them, but don't do it. Avoid being patronizing, which goes to one of the earlier points. And don't belittle or don't dismiss them by trying to be positive. It's really easy to be Pollyanna and to be really, oh, it's going to get better and you know you're going to get better. Acknowledge their feelings. Validate them. Next slide, please. So anxiety. Anxiety clinically is persistent and unfounded fear or worry, either about past or future events. Persistent and unfounded are two of the clinical specifiers, and it's one of the pathways to diagnosing clinical anxiety. Anxiety, like depression, is obviously a word that we use in common passing, in common conversation, but this is sort of the clinical level of it. It's the difficulty concentrating, having mind blanks, or impaired memory. That's something that people often don't realize until after they're out of an anxious episode. One of the techniques I use a lot with my anxiety is I will write things down at every possible point, and that is completely an anxiety coping technique. Feeling indecisive, confused, irritable, or impatient. And again, that ties back to what I just said about remembering that you love that person, not their anxiety. They will be grumpy. They will snap at you. They will not be nice. But you need to keep loving them. Feeling constantly on edge or nervous. Interrupted sleeping patterns, possibly with vivid dreams. Help people sleep. One of the things that I found quite easy to do is I'll stay up late talking to someone because it'll help me feel better. That then has a bit of a snowball negative effect, though, because if I don't sleep, things get worse and worse and worse. And sure, talking will help out into the night for that one night, but I'm better off finding other ways to get to sleep earlier and feel better that way. So some stuff to do with anxiety. Encourage them to talk about it. I'm going to come back to this when I go through suicidality in a minute, but you cannot cause a mental health condition by talking about it. It's one of those misnomers that hopefully we're all understanding at this point, but a lot of people do still have misconceptions about not wanting to talk about it. And encourage people with anxiety or with mental health condition to talk about it. Assist people to find help. Again, that's one of the things I've hopefully done in that lift out. It'll give you some ideas of services that exist. There are fortunately more than you probably think in terms of what exists. Help them get there. They won't feel, particularly with anxiety and depression, they won't feel as if they deserve help. Your validation and your encouragement that you can, that they do deserve help is incredibly useful. Acknowledge that they're not just being difficult. People with anxiety in particular have a lot of coping mechanisms that sometimes seem odd, sometimes seem weird, and sometimes seem annoying. That is part of the illness, not them just being difficult. Encourage them to get enough sleep, exercise, eat well. Something that happens particularly in Canberra and even more so in the Northern Hemisphere is something called seasonal affective disorder. Sad. When we don't get enough sunlight, we're more likely to get depressed. Some of us are more attuned to it and more likely to have it happen than others. And so particularly in the winter months, getting out and being in the sunlight, I have been known to joke that I feel like I photosynthesize. I realize humans don't. But sometimes it's tempting to just sit out in the sun. If you're having lunch with someone who might be, or if you're having lunch with anyone, frankly, sit out in the sun. Sunburn's a thing, of course, but do get out and help them. Invite the person out to keep in touch, but don't pressure them to participate. It's a very fine line between, I want to help you on it, but let them say no. And also with anxiety, let them not reply. It can be very, very easy to say, hey, I need you to reply because I'm worried about you. That is you worrying about them. Sometimes the hardest thing for them to do is to reply. One of the ways in which I know I'm anxious is my phone starts being turned off. It's been off for most of this week. All right, suicidality. Suicidality is one of those things that is not particularly common. It's dark. It's not easy to deal with. But I wanted to deal with it today because it's arguably or clearly the most serious thing that we can encounter. It's the leading cause of death in people under 45. In those under 26, it ties with car accidents in Australia for the leading cause of death. 2,000 Australians die from suicide each year, but 60,000 attempt. If we localise that to Canberra, that's roughly a fifth of the population of Canberra. It's a lot of people. And particularly in those with these pre-existing conditions, it's 7 times more likely to attempt suicide. Also, the attempt figure is that those are people who end up in hospital as a result of an attempt. That is what gets ranked in this attempt. That is not people who feel suicidal. That is not people who struggle with it. That is 60,000 people in hospital because of an attempt. So you can then extrapolate outwards to the number of people who feel it versus attempt. And a major predictor of a completed suicide is having predicted before. If you know someone who has attempted suicide, they are much, much more likely to end up completing it. So how can we know and what are some of the ideas that we can do about this? Physical changes. Major changes to sleep patterns, usually too little but sometimes too much. Loss of energy, loss of interest in personal hygiene or appearance, sudden extreme changes in eating habits, weight gain or weight loss, an increase in minor illnesses. One of the things that hasn't completely been established in the science but is growing more and more apparent is mental illness has massive links to physical illness, and it can be as small as if you're feeling really, really, really down, you're more likely to get colds, your immune system is more likely to be compromised. The behaviours, and I've highlighted these in particular because they're probably easier to pick in terms of people. They're also higher predictors of a suicide attempt. Alcohol or drug misuse, withdrawal from family or friends, quitting activities which were previously important. This is something in particular I think we can see in our churches. If someone stops coming to Bible study, if someone stops coming to church, jump on that. Please jump on that. The thing is, as with all of this, sure, there's a chance you're wrong and you know they've just been away for 3 weeks. Let's weigh up the options, guys. What are we going to rather, that we bothered someone or that the worst happened? As I flagged before, prior suicidal behaviour, self-harming. I had a great conversation with someone last week about emotional abuse being an example of self-harming. Putting yourself in situations which harm yourself emotionally is an example of self-harm. It's not, we often think of cutting and burning and physical attempts at self-harm. Staying in an emotionally abusive relationship is an example of self-harm. Putting your affairs in order and then, quite obviously, writing suicide notes or goodbye letters. Conversational signs. Feeling trapped, feeling like a burden, lack of belonging, hopelessness, guilt, wanting to escape, feeling alone, that can be a really, really big one. Damaged, I mean, we've got the saving love of Christ, thank goodness. Helplessness, particularly people who are motivated and have agency, feeling like there's nothing they can do. There is always something all of us can do, and there is always something that we can help that person find something to do. Talking about suicide or death. Planning for suicide. Obviously, there are cases in which people genuinely talk about suicide, today being an example. But talking about your own suicide or death is a really big thing. So, responding. I flagged this before, but I can't emphasise it enough. You cannot make a person suicidal by suggesting it. You have very, very little to lose by asking someone about this. If you feel they are at serious risk of suicide, whatever you do, do not leave them alone. Make a roster, stay with them to the hours of the night. I've had friends sleep in my bed with me because they were worried about me, and that, it's a hard memory to think of. but there may be cases in which you need to go to that extent. The check-in app, it's on your references. It was designed by Beyond Blue last year, specifically for young people, but I found it useful in all sorts of situations. And what it is it's an app that's available on both Android and Mac. But it helps you build a conversation for these scenarios. It takes you through common scenarios about where you might have the conversation, who you might have the conversation with, and it essentially gives you a script to how to have this. I'm not giving you a lot of imperatives and a lot of you should do this and stuff, and for that I'm sorry, but I hope the check-in app can be a nice way to start, particularly in these gravest of situations, to start to have those incredibly important conversations. So, now we're going a bit more general, hopefully lightening up a little. Ask people how you can help them. This goes back to the agency point I made before. Don't assume that you know how they can be helped. We have mental illnesses. We are humans. We are your brothers and sisters in Christ. Our identity doesn't stop or change when we have an illness. I've given you guidelines and ideas today, but one of the things you can bet your life I'll be saying to a lot of my friends who are here today is, hey, just because I've given you these tips doesn't mean it applies to me. It does apply to me in the general sense, and I'm very, very grateful that a few of them have done some amazing research in the last 6 months and learnt how to help me better based on these general principles. They work, but remember that they are your brothers and sisters first. Do take the time to understand what's going on for them. That keys into what I just said. And again, don't belittle their experiences. I've had a really depressing week too. I'm really sorry that you've had a depressing week too, but I want to kill myself. There's an equality that isn't there. Do pray with people. There's a caveat there though, particularly as a new Christian, and we all have different levels of comfortability with Christian traditions and with the ways we relate to Christ. Praying out loud in a group setting can be incredibly confrontational, particularly if you're anxious, because one of the things we do with prayer is we talk out loud to God, often in this case, about someone else. And there's not really an opportunity for me, if I'm being prayed for, to interrupt someone and say, hey, you got that bit wrong. Maybe some people do this. I've never felt comfortable doing it. But I think that's something to be aware of. Ask if you can pray for them, but be prepared for them to say no. But then tell them you will be praying for them. It's almost a Christian heuristic, I've realized, of saying, hey, I'm thinking of you. It's just with a little turbocharge. It's a really nice way to do it. And then when you're having that conversation, it's not a result of their failure. It's not a result of their sin. It may be that they are ill, but that particular, unless you're a mental health professional, is really up to them to decide. You are there, as Andrew so neatly pointed out, to be their friend or their pastor, whatever role you are. It's a different conversation to be had with mental health professionals. So, things not to say. Just give it to God. Depending on Christ and God is wonderful, don't get me wrong, and as you heard earlier, it's been a saving grace for me. But it's not that simple. Have you tried praying? Well, maybe they haven't. And maybe that's a useful reminder. But in the sense that you are saying, have you tried praying and it's going to cure it? It's not a useful thing to say. Pull yourself together. You think they haven't tried? We all feel like that sometimes, but you have to snap out of it. No, if they could have snapped out of it, they would have. And are you reading your Bible? Andrew has so wonderfully pointed us to some really useful sections of the Bible, and that's something I would encourage you to do. To say one of the most useful things that has ever been done for me in Christianity during one of my darkest times. A friend for about 5 days after he realized I was in a dark time sent me a different verse each day. I just didn't have the wherewithal to open my Bible and to figure out which bits to read. Having someone pointing me and someone who loved me so much to do that, point me to things, was incredibly useful. But just that sort of general statement of read the book, it's going to fix it, not so much. Other things not to say, just fight it. And you're hopefully seeing a common theme here. I never let myself get into that state. One of the things we do a lot when we are ill is we compare ourselves to others. We know we shouldn't, and we know it isn't relatable, but we look at particularly the people in our congregation, and we look at the shiny Christians that are around, and we compare ourselves, and we feel awful, more so than we do already, because we are comparing ourselves. You look really well. That's one I get surprisingly often. I like heels and nice dresses and putting on a really brave face because it does help me feel better. But I don't want to hear that my illness doesn't exist because I managed to put on a pretty dress. If it was that simple, high fashion would be the biggest industry in the world. There's no such thing as depression. It's not the case. I don't think I need to go into that one because you're all here today. But it does get said. You're a hypochondriac. One of the things particularly with anxiety is that you do feel like you're making it up and it's tougher than you think. And that also ties into it's a choice. Would anyone choose to feel any of this? Again, if it was, I'd love to not ever have these conversations again. That would make my life. Things to say. If you want to talk, I'm here to listen. Giving someone your time. We often talk about time as the most valuable resource we'll ever have, and that's definitely part of it. A lot of my friends this week have been caught up with assessments and with job applications and stuff. It's just that time of year. And so the most valuable thing they could have done for me is give me hours, and a few of them have, and I'm so grateful for it. Give people your time. I'm praying for you. Do you want me to pray for you now? Again, that's that agency in that question. That's letting them say no, but also letting them say yes. A group prayer can also be amazing, particularly for some of the guys that I'm friends with. It's the way they show love. They can say things through prayer that they simply can't say to me in person, and I appreciate it more than I can say. I have some practical wisdom I can share with you. That ties into helping people seek help and helping people find help. Hey, have you tried this? Again, you've got to be prepared for them to say no and I don't want to. And then you might need to come up with something else. But you can try and offer it. I have no idea of how you're feeling. That is one of the most validating things I've ever heard and that anyone with a mental illness has ever heard. I don't know what's going on, but I can try. And maybe to supplement something with Andrew said, but the psalmist might know what's going on. But let's look at the book of Job together. Because the Bible might have a better idea than I do. Be humble enough to say that you don't know what's going on for this person. And then neatly tying in is, can I share some Bible verses? Reading the Bible is something that a lot of us do, and certainly I've been able to do in quiet and in private, in those darkest times where you can't get out of bed, but you can open a book. And there is so much wisdom in that book. That's the bit I definitely don't need to sell you on. So lastly, looking after yourselves. As I said at the very beginning, this is hard. This is hard and this sucks. And being a carer, I don't think I'd quite say it's as bad as suffering, but that also implies an ordinal structure, which is a falsity. This is going to be hard, and it's going to be harder when you are supporting someone for longer than you think. Recovery is not a slow process. I think I've thought I've recovered every year since I was 8. It's never happened. And I know that for my friends and my family, that's been incredibly hard. Accept how you feel. One of the best phrases I've heard with regards to that is feel your feelings. Get angry. Don't get angry to that person, but get angry. Feel it properly. Seek out your other support networks and feel that way because it's valid. And please don't let anyone think that it isn't. Acknowledge that it will change your relationship with that person and with others, and that they will know that it changed your relationship with them. One of the hardest things for me is once someone has supported me through a tough time, I am a different person in their eyes, and I feel like I am a different person to them. And that changes it irreparably. That's really tricky. Set boundaries. If you've got something due, if you've got a work commitment, if you've got a life commitment, tell them that you can't. Be clear with them. It can't hurt. Clarity is one of the most valuable things in any of this, and in life, arguably. And then seek support for you. Not being a pastor or trained myself, I'm not great with knowing, but Andrew at least tells me that pastors often have support networks, the people that you graduated from Bible college with, or if you're in more of an organised tradition as opposed to an independent evangelical, some of the organised structures. Just because you are only caring for someone does not mean you cannot develop mental health conditions as a result of caring for someone, and it definitely does happen, and does not mean you don't deserve support. Lifeline is one of the most underutilised resources that we have. Lifeline is a crisis helpline, and that's how most people know it. And I'm glad they do, but it also is a resource where you can call if you don't know what to do. And so just quickly, if I've got slides, cool. These are just some ideas that I've been playing around with and that a few of the Christian resources I found have given us ideas for. This is where I start spitballing a little bit. This is where I just start saying, okay, what are some of the ways that we in Canberra and Canberra surrounds can make our churches more friendly and more inviting and easy to understand for those with mental illnesses? Can people find out what happens in a service beforehand? For those of us who are regular churchgoers, there's sort of an acceptable pattern. However, if you're dealing with anxiety or depression, you might not want to be around a group of people for an unspecified length of time. How long does your service regularly go for? What happens in a service? The one example I found of it, and I apologise if other people have church websites that I just haven't seen, I mean no offence, is St John's Reed. St John's Anglican actually has this brief outline, it's not a lot, but it's something, about what happens in a service. I've never been to St John's Reed, but it was a real comfort to kind of know, okay, this might happen. Do I need to make dinner plans afterwards? What does a church service in your church look like? Talk about mental illness. The first time I went to Good Shepherd, which was the first Sunday in Advent last year, there was a personal reflection about mental ill health by a member of the congregation. That was when I decided that church was home. It was the most heartening thing I've ever heard. And for me, it was home. In small groups, mention it in your prayers. We have lists of things in churches we mention in prayers. Pray for anyone who is suffering from a mental illness. It's a line to you. To someone who hears it, it could be the world. Make things clear and understandable, no matter my intellectual capacity. If I'm in the midst of depression, I can't function. I need to understand what I need to do, particularly in terms of service. You'll get a lot of anxious people or depressed people who really, really want to help, but if they have to go and speak to someone after the service and they don't know what that conversation's about and they don't know what the expectations are of them, that's just another barrier. And you can break down that barrier by putting something in your service bulletin. I think websites are a great resource, as you'll realise. Chuck something on your website. Put an email around to people and do it to everyone. Don't segregate people off in your congregation. A good friend of mine from church who's struggling at the moment told me some stuff that was going on, and she said, but you can't mention it to anyone at church. I don't want to be the church problem. It's easy to feel like you're the church problem, and that it's a double-edged sword because you're being loved and people do want to help in that Christian context, but we don't share what's going on with us because we don't want to feel different. We already do by virtue of how we feel. But we don't want to be the church problem. Offer friendship and be open. When I rocked up in church on Sunday, I didn't think anything showed that was wrong. As I said earlier, I try and dress nice and think, but someone at church clearly knew something was wrong. She grabbed me, put me down on the couch, with this little couch being kind of a start of Good Shepherd. She just hugged me. She didn't say anything. She didn't need to talk about it. But we just had a moment there. And I was able to sit there, get used to church again. Later walked up and said hello to a friend and was a genuine part of the service. Be friendly, be open. Don't make a big thing of these things. Obviously, there are scenarios in which you very much make a big thing of things. Notice what I said about suicide earlier. But these people are people. They're your brothers and sisters, and we are real, and we don't stop being a person because we have mental illnesses. That one, as you can see, I can't emphasize enough. Value people with mental health problems. As I like to think today, I've shown you that having a lived experience can be valuable. It's made my life and will make my career what it is. We have things to offer, and we would like you to help us share and use that experience, as with any experience. Offer social support. As I said earlier, churches are one of those very, very few places in our society where you see people week to week and day to day. and you interact with them and you get to know them in that real meaty sense. Capitalize on that. What treasure we possess in Christ, but what treasure we possessed in us, in these wonderful communities which can and should and will change our lives. And that, I'm going to leave it on. My email is there. I'm happy to chat afterwards. There is nothing that would make me happier than to continue this conversation and to help our churches be better, because we are doing so much. Let me emphasize that, but we could do so much. Thank you so much.